Hello, loves. How are you doing today? The lighting in here is not great because Wouter has taken back his big circle light. And quite frankly, I can't be bothered to set it up. So I think it's okay. It's really dark here. Whew. And as usual, it's cold in my office, but I am, as always, excited to get into this episode. This episode was inspired by the wonderful Helen. You obviously know who you are. I know there's many people called Helen, but I won't say her last name just in case she doesn't want to be known. But she asked me to speak about shame because if you have been following me and listening to me for a while now, you will see a theme within what I share. Shame is at the root of the eating disorder. Shame is at the root of our behaviors, of everything that we do that we say we don't want to do that isn't serving us. And so, if you are a perfectionist, if you identify as someone who feels like they must get everything right, then this episode is definitely for you. And I am assuming that's going to be 99.9% of my audience. In dysfunctional families, there is always a thread of shame that runs through the family, which often operates out of our awareness. We have a core of shame, and we do everything in our power to avoid experiencing that shame. Instead, we try to be good and perfect, and often convince ourselves that everything is great and fine. Because the experience of feeling shame is so painful. And shame keeps us silent, it keeps us sick, and it keeps us separate. As I go through this episode, I'm going to do my very best to actually speak a little bit slower because there's a lot here to digest, there's a lot to understand. And so I think it will be helpful to me to speak, for me to speak a little bit slower. So let's see how I do with that. All right. Perfectionism then. Those of us who try to get things the most perfect are actually the ones with the most shame because we are desperately trying to get away from that shame. Shame and perfectionism are two sides of the same coin. And that quote is by the incredible Brené Brown, which I'm going to be referring a lot to her work as I go through this episode, actually. And as I said previously, shame keeps us silent, sick, and separate. It keeps us silent because we don't feel we can speak up due to the fear of looking stupid, that was mine, or fear of judgment from others. It keeps us silent because we don't feel that we're worthy of actually speaking up and asking for our needs to be met, or we don't feel worthy of setting boundaries with ourselves and others. We think there is something innately wrong with us. It keeps us sick because our physical body is a manifestation of our inner emotional world. So I have a question for you. And that question is, where is shame currently keeping you sick? For example, having an eating disorder, IBS, skin rashes, etc. It keeps us separate because we don't feel we can truly connect with others due to the fear of not being good enough at our core. We fear that if someone truly sees us, then they will see how bad and wrong we are. And they will reject us. We think allowing others to say separate, so not being our true authentic selves, and often people pleasing, protects us from being rejected and reinforces the shame that we feel. So, just said in a different way, if we don't show up as our true authentic selves in relationships, all kinds of relationships. We do that because we want to distance ourselves a little bit. We don't want the person to fully, truly see who we are because we think there's something wrong with us at our core. So we go into patterns of people pleasing. And we think that being disconnected and separate from others, we think it protects us from being rejected and reinforcing the shame that we feel. And often it can. but we're going to go into how to overcome shame as we go through this episode. But I think it's important to speak to what is shame exactly. And so here is Brené Brown again. According to Brené Brown in her incredible book, Daring Greatly, she says, and quote, "Shame is the fear of not being worthy of connection and belonging. It is the fear that you are not good enough and will be rejected for your weaknesses. It overtakes the prefrontal cortex and initiates your fight or flight response. Instead of being able to think critically or analyze the legitimacy of a threat, you are thrust into survival mode," quote. So once the shame cycle begins, you only really have three options, and that is to fight, to freeze, or to flee, which is to run. You may recognize these are nervous system responses, the fight or flight or freeze response. It's the sympathetic nervous system in action. In terms of human behavior, this might look like aggression, numbing, or people pleasing. Being in this type of survival mode prevents you from connecting meaningfully with yourself and with others, which impedes your ability to live wholeheartedly. And the categories of shame, then, you probably already know where in your life you feel shame. But Brené Brown research, because she's a shame researcher, for those of you that don't know her, she's dedicated her entire life to researching shame. And she identifies 12 categories that fall under three core themes of shame. So we have body image and health. Number one, mental and physical health. Fear of not having a fit enough body, not being strong enough, not being smart enough, and so on. Number two, addiction. Fear of never feeling happy enough, alive enough, or peaceful enough. Number three, sex. Fear of unworthiness or fear of being ugly. Number four, aging. Fear of no longer being loved and admired for looks, or fear of mental deterioration. Number five, appearance and body image. Fear of not having the right weight, the right makeup, clothes, and so on. Relationships. Number six, motherhood or fatherhood. Fear of being unprepared or unable to identify with the role of a mother or father. Number seven, parenting. Fear of not being a good enough parent, not nurturing enough, or not respectable enough. Number eight, family. Fear of judgment, fear of loss, fear of not being stable enough, and so on. Number nine, surviving trauma. Fear of not being safe, not being worthy of love, or not being connected enough. Number 10, religion. Fear of not being a good enough person, or fear of punishment. And then we have the last category, social status or status, however you want to say it. Number 11, money and work. Fear of not having enough money, being criticized in front of co-workers, having to file for unemployment, and so on. Number 12, being stereotyped or labeled, fear of not being fully seen or fear of judgment. So where does shame come from? This is the main body of this episode today, because it was really helpful for me in my recovery as I started to really delve deep. And to be honest, I didn't start to delve deep until I was ready to delve deep, because there was a lot there that I was unwilling to see. And I was kind of in the everything's fine, everything's great kind of club. And I really thought that I was, until I started to really delve deep and I was like, oh shit, this is far from okay and great. So it helped me to understand where all of my shame came from. And then I was able to heal. And it's a continuing journey, by the way, that I don't know if it ever ends, but it gets so much easier and you become more and more healed every day, and only you can heal yourself. So where does shame come from? Chronic shame, and this is where I'm going to try and slow down. Chronic shame comes from growing up in a family where we were not seen, where we didn't get our needs met, where we were not validated, and where there was not space for us as a child to be a child. We were not validated. I've said that. And there were not space. We're not, that doesn't make sense. when we were not validated and there wasn't space for us as a child. And this happens for many reasons. The most common reason is that we are attending to our parents' needs instead of them attending to ours. This will happen if we have a mother who has got a lot of her own wounds. People commonly describe this as a narcissistic mother, where it's all about the mother instead of attending to the child's needs. It will look like, are you ready for this? It will look like the mother, sorry, let me back up. It will look like the child being the mother's best friend, her confidant, making her feel better about herself and minimizing our needs, just being there to be like a best friend to our mother, crosses the mother-child dynamic. And when the child is in childhood, this is not appropriate. This is never meant to be the role of a child. Now, if you're older in adulthood and you see yourself as friends with your mom, I don't think this is disordered depending on your relationship that you had in childhood. But as a child, if you see or if you remember seeing your mom as her as your best friend, being a space for her to share secrets with and things like that and making her feel better about herself, that's not okay. That's actually codependence. That's actually enmeshment, which creates codependency, and it's actually abuse. So in childhood, mirroring is a key aspect of how we learn about ourselves as a child, because shame arises relationally. And what that means is, as children, one of our key needs is to be mirrored. We first know ourselves through our parents knowing us. Our parents give us language to describe ourselves, and they reflect that back to us. And this is how we come to know that we are good enough. I think I'm going to read that again. Just, I feel intuitively that people need to hear that again. Shame arises relationally. And what that means is, as children, one of our key needs is to be mirrored. We first know ourselves through our parents knowing us. Our parents give us language to describe ourselves, and they reflect that back to us. And that is how we come to know that we are good enough. Let me give you a tangible example of this. Let's say as a toddler, we were playing in a puddle outside and we were having a great time splashing around and jumping up and down in the puddle, thoroughly enjoying ourselves, laughing and giggling and all of that. Our mother will mirror us by looking into our eyes and laughing with us, enjoying seeing us enjoying ourselves in the puddle. She will laugh too, and she will delight at us. Our brain isn't fully developed yet, of course, but we see that and we feel on a nervous system level. We feel the delight. We pick up all of the signs of safety and joy coming from her as she sees us playing. The mirroring is that I am lovable. I am okay. She sees me. She witnesses me in my play. And the dad or the grandparents can also do this mirroring. This is a constant dance of children seeking their parents out and the parents' response. Often this is non-verbal, the laughing with, the looking into the eyes, the voice that says, wow, I see you're having so much fun. Isn't that wonderful? Look at you. The participating in jumping in the puddle with the child. There are multiple interactions throughout each day where the child learns, I am lovable. I am safe. I am validated. Words can contribute to this, but primarily, primarily, it's the body language and how the parent feels about what the child is doing that really matters. This is going on all of the time, and a lot of this is unconscious from the parent as well. When we don't get enough mirroring, and when we are not seen for who we are and validated, oh my God, I'm so sorry. That's very annoying, isn't it? I haven't got my water with me either. Let me go again. When we don't get enough mirroring, and when we are not seen for who we are and validated for who we are, we might be told the message of, You're too much. You have too many big emotions. You overwhelm me. You need to put your emotions away so that you can attend to me. We end up with a sense of shame. We can't speak this, obviously, because this starts to happen around the first to the second year of life. So when we're between the ages of one or two, we can't precisely decode this either as adults, because we might not have the words for this. But when we are not met in our needs, when we are not validated, when no one delights at us, we end up with a feeling of chronic shame. If a parent is mentally unwell or depressed or very physically exhausted, or there is addiction in the household, or the parents are emotionally unavailable, it's very common that we develop a sense of shame. Let's go into rupture and repair now. So rupture and repair are a really important part of not being left with a sense of chronic shame. We, of course, know that our parents cannot do things perfectly for us. And so when a parent gets angry, for example, and shouts at the child, we, as young children, get left with a sense of, oh, it's something about me. I am bad. If the parent doesn't apologize and repair afterwards, children are rightly narcissistic, which means that children think everything is about them. They think the world revolves around them, and they think that they cause things. They think if a parent is behaving a certain way, then it's their fault and their fault alone. And so when parents apologize and say, oh no, this is my fault, I was feeling really stressed and then I got angry and just snapped, that must have been really scary for you, I'm so sorry, the parent takes back the shame from their children in a way. Chronic shame is when a child has consistently not gotten their needs met. As children, if we were left alone through our emotions and not attended to, if there wasn't space for our big emotions, or if our parents didn't know how to support us through our emotions, we are left with the sense of, I am bad for having these emotions. Also, if our parents tried to bypass our negative emotions by saying things such as, big girls don't cry, I don't like it when you're sad, it makes me sad, smile, it's not that bad. Instead of making space for all of our emotions and reassuring us that it's okay to feel this way, we think we are bad and wrong for having these feelings. And we all know that shame is a heavy feeling. Shame is so hard to be open about because it's so painful to talk about the areas in which we don't feel we are good enough. When we're trying to get things perfect and right, and when we don't tolerate any mistakes from ourselves, when we feel like problems are a huge issue, and when we are people pleasing, that's often an indication of chronic shame at play. When we get to the root of the external problem, an eating disorder, sex addiction, love avoidance, substance abuse, gambling, all those things, eating disorders are most common with what obviously I talk about. When we get to the root of the external quote problem, it comes down to, I am unlovable. I can't get anything right. I am stuck. I suck. And this is all my fault. It boils down to the sense of, I am not good enough. Now, let me go into shame triggers. And I always say, not always, since I've been on my healing journey, I've learned, and I always say from that moment on, that my triggers are my teachers and an opportunity to look within. Because when you're triggered, it's nothing to do with the person or the experience triggering you. It's to do with why you are triggered about the circumstance or what the person has done, right? So shame triggers are topics that evoke emotional responses based on your insecurities. These triggers are often the result of your upbringing, obviously we've just spoken about that, and can elicit one of these negative responses. Silence, you say nothing and internalize your feelings. This leads to disconnection as you shut yourself off emotionally. Complacency, you people please, You overcompensate to pretend that nothing's wrong. This causes disappointment as you succumb to the pressure of others. Aggression. You lash out and often shame other people in retaliation. This perpetuates and exacerbates the shame culture. For example, if you feel insecure about your body and someone makes an offhand comment about someone else's weight, you may feel an emotional response to their comment, leading you to do one of the following. You walk away and dive into your work. When people ask you what's wrong, you say nothing. You overcompensate by also making fun of the person your colleague was talking about. Later, you feel disappointed for commenting on someone else's weight. That's complacency. Or you tell your colleagues to back off, then comment on their appearance. Your colleague feels shame and takes it out on someone else, and that's aggression. These triggers, as we know, are developed in childhood but carry on into adulthood. For example, if you were raised to believe that laziness is unacceptable, this was also one of mine, you may view taking breaks or getting sick as unacceptable because they keep you from working or getting on with things. This may cause you to make unhealthy decisions and overwork yourself to avoid shame. Shame prevents you from developing worthiness. I'm going to say that again. Shame prevents you from developing worthiness. Worthiness is the conviction that you are good enough as you are. Worthiness is underpinned by four key principles. And this is from Brené's book, The Gifts of Imperfection, another great book. So number one, accepting yourself unconditionally. This is what worthiness looks and feels like. You don't need to hit a milestone to become worthy. For example, losing a certain amount of weight, you're enough right now. Number two, rejecting the idea that to be good enough, you need to adhere to social norms or the expectations of others. You're worthy as you are, regardless of what anyone else thinks. Number three, abandoning the idea that you need to work for your worthiness. You don't need to prove yourself to be enough. Your worth is based on who you are, not what you do. And number four, believing that you're worthy of love and belonging. If you don't, you won't be able to truly experience these emotions. And another quote from Brené Brown has just popped into my head, and that quote is, "Why are we all hustling so hard for our worthiness when all we have to do is claim it?" The greatest barrier to developing worthiness is shame. Shame prevents worthiness from growing because it tells you that you'll never be good enough. It encourages you to reject and hide the parts of yourself that you think other people will dislike. It also convinces you that if you do reveal your flaws and struggles, they'll come to define you. People will focus on your bad parts and ignore everything good about you. The key thing I would like you to get out of this episode is that the shame voice does not speak the truth. We're not supposed to be people pleasing more or trying to be more perfect or trying to get more things right. What we actually need to do is address the shame. And we do this by attending to ourselves, attending to the needs of ourselves and the needs of our inner child. To over time learn that we are good enough and know that the messages we got from childhood are simply not true. The actual experience of shame when we feel there is something wrong with us is so much a physical body experience, we want to get away from that feeling as quickly as possible. It's a very visceral, physiological experience. You might experience it as brain fog, posture change, a physical crunching feeling in the stomach area, hotness, dizziness. We feel very distressed in our body and very unsafe. Because it's so painful, we turn away from it and try to do more. Please more people, say yes to things we have no capacity for and get everything right, be more perfect. As a child, it would have been a danger signal, the sense of shame, because it would have been a breaking connection, or there was going to be violence or abuse. you were being gaslighted or your needs were not being met. And so that sense of shame gives us a sense of danger and a, oh, I need to do something to get away from this feeling. It's dangerous. The key thing now is to learn that the shame is part of an old story. The shame voice does not speak the truth. What's the solution to shame then? A huge part. In fact, let's just take a breath. Okay, you may want to listen to this episode more than once. A huge part of breaking down our shame is letting others in, sharing how we feel and shining a light on the parts of us that we feel shameful about. We need the courage to be vulnerable and stay open as we share and practice receiving empathy and love from others. We first need to acknowledge our shame and what causes it. Recognizing your shame and its causes will allow you to separate from your negative thoughts and emotions before they can cause you to experience fear, react with blame, and become disconnected from yourself and others. The second thing, acknowledging your shame will enable you to practice courage, compassion, and connection. So remember, shame keeps us sick, separate, and what was the third one? Oh my God, one sec. I literally just wrote this. Oh yeah, silent, sick, and separate. And so the opposite of those obviously are, where am I? Here we go. The opposite of those is courage, compassion, and connection. So silent, sick, and separate to courage, compassion, and connection. Number three, develop critical awareness of shame. Critical awareness is an understanding of why we deem certain identities as shameful, how shame around these identities impacts society, who's most affected by the shame of identities, and who benefits the most from them. A great question to ask yourself is, who is benefiting from me feeling this way? So if it's a body image trigger of shame and you're wanting to lose weight and to diet and put extra makeup on and all these things because you don't feel good enough as you are, wait, who is benefiting from me feeling this way? To develop critical awareness about shame, think of an identity that makes you feel ashamed. Which components of this shameful identity contradict society's or your inner circle's expectations? Then think of the ideal you feel like you're supposed to be living up to instead, and consider its impact on society at large. Again, a question asked in a different way. Who suffers because of this ideal's existence and who profits from it? And number four, learn to talk about shame and connect with others. We connect with others by sharing experiences and establishing mutual support. This is crucial to combating shame because it facilitates the empathy element of connection, which helps you put courage and compassion into action. Furthermore, once you learn how to express your own shame and ask for support, you'd be better equipped to listen and to support others. If you would like support as you understand and navigate your own shame, especially around your body and your relationship with food, then reach out to me because you are not alone. As I was saying this episode, shame is so painful. We do everything we can to run away from it. And honestly, most of the time it's unconscious. So many times I ask my clients, how do you really feel? And they might feel disgusted or frustrated or angry. And then underneath all of those protective masked feelings, which you may also be feeling in your body, at the core, it's shame. And shame, as you know, is created from childhood when our needs have not been met, when the mirroring has not been done, when our parents do not even know how to hold their own emotions, let alone their child's and their children's emotions. There's no one to blame here. It's just understanding and love and compassion and sharing and being vulnerable and also moving forward and reparenting yourself and meeting the needs that you didn't get met as a child with love, gentleness, and compassion. Okay, my loves, let me know what you thought of this episode. As always, I would be so grateful if you haven't already to rate this podcast or thumbs up on YouTube. I don't really know actually how it works on YouTube. I guess a thumbs up and share it with as many people as possible that you think it will benefit. But on my podcast, especially to rate me 5 stars, because it really helps a lot for people to find me. And, you know, I give so much of this away with love for free to help as many people as possible. So after this episode, I would love to hear your insights. You can leave voice notes on Spotify, I believe. Tag me in your stories and I'll reshare you and connect with me, share what came up for you. And as you navigate and digest this and then start to navigate forward, understand how perhaps your whole eating disorder, whether that be anorexia, binge eating, bulimia, orthorexia, whatever it is, will have been born from shame. And you are not alone. I feel you. I see you. You matter to me. Every human's needs is to be seen, to be heard, and to matter. And I see you. I hear you. And you matter to me. Okay. I love you. I'm here for you. I will see you next week. Mwah.